you can eat really well, but be a stressed out person and get sick all the time because your emotional and spiritual health is just completely out of balance.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an entrepologist and naturopathic doctor, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people kind of like you. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. Today's interview was fascinating. It was with a fellow naturopathic doctor, Dr. Marie Matheson. Marie practices in Ottawa, and the almost exclusive focus in her practice is Lyme disease and the associated chronic infections. And while you may at first glance think that this doesn't apply to you, I couldn't disagree more. You see, at the end of the day, when we back up and try to understand where disease comes from, it usually comes from two sources: infections and exposures. We don't just talk about Lyme today. We talk about this notion of stealth infections, this idea that we gain exposures at times where we don't even recognize, and those organisms lie dormant in our system until we are tired, until we go through trauma, until our immune system can no longer keep them at bay. If you are a citizen of the world and you get outside your bubble, then this interview is for you. Dr. Marie Matheson, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Megan. Thanks for having me. It's a real honor and a pleasure to have been asked to do this.
Well, I'm really excited to talk to you today about Lyme, but also how that fits into the big picture of people's health, which is, you know, the notion of stealth infections and this idea of us being even susceptible to them in the first place. So I feel like talking about Lyme is a public service announcement to anyone living, well, anywhere. And then the second piece is stuff that no one even really considers or talks about. So I'm really excited to jump into both of these topics with you. How did you become, I know they hate it when we say expert, but how did you come to have this huge focus in your practice and in your life's work related to Lyme disease?
Well, it all started with my niece who was bitten by a tick. What that universe brought me was a greater understanding, or I should say a lack of understanding. I felt like I hadn't been properly educated in naturopathic medical school. Basically set myself to international conferences all over the world to learn and train on how to treat this illness. And that followed with, you know, on a personal note, my children's tick bites and ILADS was kind enough to offer me a scholarship to the physician's training program where I trained with Dr. Charles Ray Jones, who is the world-renowned leading expert in treating pediatric children in Connecticut. And so through my teachings with Charles Ray Jones, that accelerated my learning. I'm so grateful to my patients for allowing me being part of their journey to getting better, to healing fully from these chronic stealth infections.
Okay, you just said something there that I want to delve into a little deeper. What is a stealth infection?
A stealth infection is really an infection that is persistent, resistant to a lot of treatments. It shapes itself into different forms. It morphs into cis forms, L forms, S forms, and many different shapes and morphologies, and that makes it really difficult to treat. And I suppose this is why chronic Lyme disease has been such a difficult treatment for most patients, because of the varieties that we get in terms of these stealth infections. Stealth infections are not just related to Lyme disease. It can be related to other types of infections. Viruses are stealth. Other bacteria are stealth, such as Babesia, Bartonella, including parasites. And I would like to also add, including yeast. Yeast is probably one of the most stealth infections I see, and patients can never really get rid of it. So when we're talking about stealth infections, we're really talking about infections that have been really quite resistant to biological treatments as well as conventional treatments.
Okay, we're gonna go in there even further. And stealth infections, to be clear, is not some term we made up as naturopathic doctors. This is a well-documented phenomenon when we look at the life cycle of microorganisms, correct?
That's exactly correct, yes.
Right. Okay, so what is Lyme disease, and what's the difference between an acute manifestation and a chronic manifestation?
So Lyme disease really has to do with really actually one strain of the bacteria, which is the Borrelia burgdorferi. It was named after William Burgdorferi, who investigated this in the late 80s and 90s. But it really is a term, unfortunately. I believe in fact it's the wrong term to use, because it really only tells us about the Borrelia burgdorferi bacteria. But what it doesn't tell us about is all of the other co-infections that can be just as stealth and just as serious in their illnesses, including Babesia, Bartonella, Anaplasma, Ehrlichia, and I could go on and on. The best term I've ever heard was one coined by Dr. Richard Horowitz. He coins it MCIDS, and this stands for Multiple Infectious Disease Syndrome. And I think this is a far, far better way to address our chronically ill patients, because this tells us that, wait a second, it's not just about the Lyme bacteria. It may be about this yeast that you've had all your life, because you suffered from 18 yeast infections before the age of 24. Or what about the appendicitis? What about the bacteria that was in there when you were 6 years old? Or what about the parasite you picked up when you were in Africa 20 years ago? Or what about the mono you got in high school, the Epstein-Barr virus? So then we see, wait a second, are you so tired because of Lyme, or is this because of Epstein-Barr virus? So we start to see, wait a second, this is way more than just Lyme disease. There are many, many infections that could create the illness. And so when we look at Lyme, when we're talking about acute Lyme, yes, we are looking at a patient who's just been bitten, just been infected. They may present with a headache, fever, sore neck, sore joints, migratory joint pains, and flu-like symptoms. When it goes into chronic Lyme, and I'll say that's really after the four-week mark. So you've got a window of 4 weeks before things shift. So you have to treat aggressively, and we'll talk about treatments during an acute tick bite, but you have to treat aggressively during and before that 4 weeks, and you really don't have time to waste, because otherwise you have higher chances of going into chronic Lyme. Chronic Lyme really means a lot deeper manifestations. So we'll see a lot more neurological symptoms, cardiac symptoms, shortness of breath. We may see where it's debilitating fatigue, numbness and tingling. We'll start to see a lot of autonomic nervous system dysfunctions, such as POTS or dysautonomia. And so patients really become debilitated at this point. And that really can happen just after 4 weeks. People look at it as if you have it after a year, but a lot of symptoms can happen actually quite quickly.
And when you say people are bit, you mean that they're bit by a tick?
That's right. So it could be a bite from a tick. It could be a bite from a sandfly. It could be a bite from a flea. It could be many different insects. Chaga and spiders can pass these infections as well, as so can mosquitoes. I mean, when we think about malaria, how is that vector passed? It's passed through mosquitoes. So I like to look at it more as a vector-borne illness as opposed to a tick-borne illness, because it makes it seem like it's just ticks that pass these infections. I haven't even talked about the bedroom. I mean, you know, this is unfortunately an illness that can be passed in the forest or, you know, from other insects, but this is a sexually transmitted disease because it's a spirochete. It's much in the same family as a syphilis. So it's a sexually transmitted disease, and Eva Sapi came out with that research in 2013. It has vertical transmission as well, so it can be passed in utero and through breast milk. So, you know, we're talking about a real epidemic here. This is, in my opinion, far exceeds the seriousness of HIV. This is outside, inside. You know, this is going to be 6 degrees of separation with us knowing somebody with chronic Lyme disease, I believe, by 2020.
Okay, I have so many questions for you. One, I'm sitting here with my mouth open. I'm like, where are we safe to go? I can't even recruit to my bedroom. How do you manage this? You've got kids. You get outside. Like, you're engaged in a full life. Like, how do you not get 100% paranoid at all times with respect to these infections? And are there certain people who are more susceptible to the acquisition of any number of these stealth infections?
That's an excellent question, because this is the thing. How does a child get bitten and only develops knee pain and a little bit of fatigue, and another child gets bitten and goes right into full-blown seizures? So, you know, I get this question from doctors often who call and are inquiring, like, and I'll ask, what was the child's health prior to illness? And they'll say, oh, totally healthy. And I'll say, really? I say, did they have asthma? Oh, yeah, asthma was there. Okay, what about allergies? Oh, yeah, actually, lots of environmental allergies, tons of food sensitivities, appendicitis at 4 years old, and so on and so forth. Poor diet. All of these markers are really setting the stage. You know, it's the famous French microbiologist, Louis Pasteur, said it's not the bug, it's the terrain. So this is, I think, the beauty about what we do as naturopathic physicians and doctors, is that we look at the terrain, and that terrain is so much more important than the bug. So why does one person get bitten by a tick and develop ALS, which has happened to many of my patients, within a month, or another one just gets a little bit of fatigue or a little bit of joint pain? So really it has to do with the garbage toxic overload. So if you ate McDonald's 3 times a day, if you stressed out about everything all your life, if you had poor health prior to, you had lots of eczema, you were not well, then you can imagine you are a perfect, beautiful host for this infection. They are ready to just take over, and they are ready to set in and set the stage for what they want, because you have very little immune support or resistance. So it really, the person's health has everything to do with why somebody manifests symptoms or not. I mean, perfect example is I treat a few 80-year-olds who love just having a quick chat with me. Once a year, they come in for a doctor's checkup, and I give them a cough syrup or something, and they look around my room, and I've got lots of articles and posters on Lyme disease in my room, and they say, Dr. Marie, you really work with a lot of Lyme disease. You know, I used to pick ticks off my body coming on the bus every morning when I was 10 years old. You know, just, you know, 10 a day at least. And I look at them and I go, you can't tell me this patient doesn't have the spirochetes in them. Of course they do. You can have the bug in you and actually never, ever develop symptoms. It's only if you get, you know, potentially a divorce or hit by a car and fall down the stairs or have a lose your job. These stressors can actually activate low dormant infections. So, you know, your health has everything to do with how serious your disease will manifest.
Right. And these are opportunistic critters. And so when you give them the opportunity, they will manifest.
Yes, that's right. It's not to say if you get bitten by a tick which contains 25 infections, no matter how clean and perfectly your diet is and green juicing and all of that and organic, I'm sure you're going to get ill. These are, as we mentioned, these are stealth infections. So we do need to treat the infections, but that person, that same person will recover much faster. I mean, perfect example is patients who come in, it's a bit of a wait to see me. And so they'll come in and see me and I'll put them on a paleo or gluten-free, sugar-free diet right away. They'll tell their friends who's waiting to see me in 4 months. And that friend will go, well, I need to follow the diet. Give me the diet. What did she do? What did she say? I'm going to do the same thing. And by the time that patient sees me in 4 months, guess what? They are 30% better. Or 40% better. And they haven't done anything. They haven't treated the infection. We haven't dealt with the immune system. They're on no supplements, no treatments whatsoever. So when people say, is what I eat, does that make a difference? How I pertain myself, how I carry myself, the way I react to stress. Yes, all of these things have a huge importance on your ability to recover and to be able to withstand these infections.
100%. It's so funny that we don't get it, right?
Yes.
Like, I feel like health management and acumen around what promotes health and financial management, I can draw so many analogies. And the irony is these are the two things as an adult that really fundamentally matter. And we're never taught them anywhere in life.
I know. And the thing is like, you know, these poor truck drivers I treat, right? They go on the side of they come off the truck to go for a pee and they get bitten by a tick. I mean, these guys are eating fast food 3 times a day. So when they come into my office, I mean, these are really, really sick patients. They end up getting tremors and Parkinson's. And so we look at that and we go, yeah, it is everything. And these guys don't do as well because of poor diet, poor health, night shifts, all of that, lack of sleep. This makes a stress at home, all of that. This makes a huge difference in how people respond to treatment.
Yeah, massive susceptibilities. So mm-hmm. We get this because we see this all the time, and you see Lyme in particular all the time. Why is this paradigm of medicine and the chronic nature of stealth infection so controversial in the traditional medical model?
Well, I want to say it's controversial, and I'll start with lack of education. But there is a controversy in that some doctors believe if you get treatment for Lyme disease, if you get a couple of weeks of antibiotics and you still have symptoms, you have post-Lyme disease syndrome. And that is a syndrome that they say we don't really know why it happens, but we assume it's just from tissue damage of the infection and inflammation caused by the infection, but that there is no possible way that you still have the infection in you because we treated it with the antibiotics. Well, guess what? We are 10 part bug, 1 part human. We have more bug cells in us than we do human cells. And when I tell little kids in my practice that, they just like their eyes bug out of their head and they just can't believe it. But it is true. We are bugs. And so to say that we can completely eradicate infections out of us is absolutely ludicrous. And in fact, sadly enough, you know, when I say this to a patient on a first visit, they get so upset and they feel like they've got lack of hope. It's hard for them to understand when I say you can be 100% symptom free, but you will still have the infection in you, but that's okay because you're 10 part bug, 1 part human. And so the same goes with this controversy is that, you know, they're saying that the infection is gone, but you just have inflammation. But my question to you and to these doctors would be, well, then tell me what's causing the inflammation. And if you don't have an answer for that, then I cannot sit here and believe that there is no infection. There is an absolute infection. And so that's where the controversy stems. The controversy also stems because we have inaccurate testing here in Canada. So most patients fall through the cracks. I mean, as you have to understand, I've treated thousands of Lyme patients thus far, and I have seen only a dozen positive Canadian tests. Only a dozen. A dozen.
I know, but if we don't find things on testing, they don't exist. That's how we make people healthy.
That's right. But the CDC, Megan, says that this is an illness based on clinical symptoms first, then history of exposure. Does the person camp? Do they hunt? Do they walk in the woods? Do they see ticks on their dogs? And then lastly, his serological evidence, that's blood work. So that is the last thing that we do to confirm a clinical diagnosis. You know, Charles Ray Jones always said to me, the absence of proof is not proof of absence.
Right.
So, you know, we just because we don't have the proof on paper, it doesn't mean you don't have it. And I, you know, on a daily basis, on a 10 times a day basis, see in my practice, okay, we don't have a lot of clinical evidence here to show us some serological blood work, but we have enough evidence to know that you have the symptoms from our clinical history. And with treatment, my patients do get better. So the proof is in the pudding. The proof is when my patients, I treat them for these infections and they get better, then that's proof enough for me to know that they had them.
Well, yeah. And I think that argument of, well, we don't see evidence of that active infection, therefore it's gone. I mean, we see evidence in medicine all the time of that argument just being thrown out. I mean, think about shingles or cold sores or any of these.
That's right.
Any of these pieces, right? So,
right. So you go into a doctor's, office with a migraine. There's no test for a migraine. They just give you the medication for the migraine.
Right.
You go in with, chronic fatigue or really a lot of pain points all over your body. There's no test for fibromyalgia. They just diagnose you with fibromyalgia.
Is this a lack of training in the traditional system? Is this a can of worms, do you think, in the traditional system? Where do you think part of the systemic challenge?
Part of the blockage is, part of the blockage is caused by a lack of consistency with causal chains. So when we look at our medical teachings, my best friend graduated from medical school and said, we have the same textbook, but she went to naturopathic medical school and medical school, and she said, we have the same textbooks, but naturopathic doctors look at the heart affecting the lungs affecting the digestive tract affecting the spleen. Everything's interrelated, and some of the symptoms that you have are just icebergs, but it could be that your urinary tract infection is also causing your headaches. Whereas in the conventional system, you've got a heart problem, I'm going to send you to a cardiologist. You have a GI problem, you go to a gastroenterologist. And so these problems are not interrelated. There's no way a gut bacteria could be causing heart palpitations in your heart. But of course it can. These bacteria are free flowing in our bloodstream. So I think there's a segregation in terms of how we examine, we look at the body. And by doing that segregation, then we really lack the curiosity and lack the ability to look at the potential cause of the symptoms as to why these symptoms are happening, as opposed to just offering a medication for it. And, I might add that many naturopathic doctors can act as green allopaths, right? I mean, I'm, looking at PMS, giving just fish oils and EPO isn't really treating the cause in my opinion. It's just bringing down the inflammatory response. But what you also want to do is find out why they have the PMS. Do they have food allergies? Do they have yeast overgrowth or parasites that are increasing that inflammatory response? So I think that's the sort of difference in the educational system and why that controversy has arisen.
Well, and it's just so obvious at this point that our evolution in terms of our understanding of how the body works has far exceeded that traditional medical framework. And at this point, it's just simply inconvenient to that medical model to try to shift to reflect where we're all at. I mean, on average, study will come out and we're not seeing changes clinically for 5 to 7 years afterwards, which is unfortunate, because then we have moved on. But for people who put the utmost faith in what their primary care, traditionally trained physician has to say, I feel like, at least in my practice, and it's probably different for yours, but I've had patients who've come in and I said, listen, like, we have to rule out Lyme. And they're like, no problem. They go back to their doctor and their doctor says, no, there's no way I could have Lyme. There's not even Lyme in this part of the country. So let's move on. And it is a frustrating cycle to get caught in. How do we test for Lyme? So assuming the symptoms are there and there's a corresponding history, how do you then look for serological evidence of its presence?
So I will use, I will outsource labs, international labs, that I have that are far more accurate in the testing. So I use Western Blot. That's typically the one I'm recommending at this point. There's some very exciting new laboratory diagnosis that's been started with Dr. Klinghart, who's actually starting to use PEMF therapy alongside with ultrasound and basically really an agitation of the tissues to actually help dump out the infections into the urine and testing the urine afterwards. So I think that's very promising. I think that'll be a very promising test if we can do it, because that's testing a PCR polymerase chain reaction, which is the DNA. And you can't dispute DNA with insurance companies. You can dispute a Western blot and an antibody response, but you can't dispute a PCR. And the problem we're having is that a lot of labs, the PCR will never come back positive. So there's some, it's ever changing with Lyme. There's always such a fascinating and new information coming forth, which is why, I think that this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. It's like somebody treating cancer. I can't possibly know what's around the corner in a week with cancer. It's ever so changing. And so this is why I'm specializing in this treatment, because I'm constantly going to conferences or teaching myself at conferences to educate myself as much as I can.
Yeah. So in listening to what you're saying and talking before about the fact that this is a multi-illness, multi-infectious disease illness, this conversation that they're having around, oh, we're working on a Lyme vaccine. Do you see that as something that's going to be beneficial? Because I'm listening to you being like, there's sure, good, we'll stop Lyme. But there's 10 other things that could be passed on at the same time.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one of the questions my patients ask me all the time. Okay, so since I just got bitten, that means I'm immune? And I look at them and say, unfortunately, there's over 300 strains of Lyme disease here, only here in North America, and hundreds and hundreds more internationally. So no, it does not pertain to immunity for it. So I find it hard to believe that we'll be able to vaccinate against Lyme. What about all of the other co-infections? Some of the top 8 co-infections that are also residing in that tick. And what about parasites and yeast and everything else? I mean, these are, I call them, nature's dirty needles. So, I find it hard to believe that a vaccine is going to be able to give us full immunity against this illness. And in fact, when they vaccinated 20 years back, it caused the illness. So that's why it was pulled off the market very quickly. So it's a hard one. The immune system, the thing with Lyme, Megan, is that you can get yeast, you can get, other infections, but the immune system really doesn't like the spirochete. And it's actually your immune system that's creating the symptoms. It's actually trying to attack it and fight it. And it really dislikes it. And so it, especially when it's dealing with other toxins in the body. And so it's just an infection that can tip the boat very quickly, in that you can all of a sudden, go from, feeling fine to not feeling so fine. And you can have this infection dormant with you in years, and then it just finds a passageway and an area, an Achilles heel, and it can come out of full dormancy. And the immune system really tends to attack it as much as it can.
Yeah. And just for people who are listening and they're like, spirochete, what are you talking about? Spirochete it's talking really about a type of bacteria, and it's almost like the shape of it. I always remember in school picturing this like boring thing.
Like a corkscrew.
Right. That can dig into the earth, and what it can do is it can get into tissues and isolated parts of the body, and then it sets up all its other protective mechanisms. So it's
that's right.
Yeah. It's physically designed to hide.
That's right. That's right. And then in the other protective mechanisms would be biofilms. And so these are mucilaginous layers that the spirochetes and other infections board around themselves, much like a cocoon made of fats and carbohydrates and other bacteria. And they form colonies with yeast and viruses. And they actually are protecting themselves against this immune invasion with this biofilm, and they can actually communicate with a language called quorum sensing with other biofilms, and can orchestrate a slew of inflammatory events behind closed doors. So the biofilms is an interesting piece, because I've seen many patients who get in a ski accident or fall downstairs and all of a sudden wake up the next day with migratory joint pains, numbness and tingling, and brain fog. Some of these symptoms are not concussion symptoms. And so we can actually implode these biofilms through actual physical trauma, and we can actually implode them through epinephrine response, through stress response. The epinephrine will actually perforate holes through the biofilm and actually release the bacteria. And it's like all of a sudden you're releasing Pandora's box. You're releasing this bacteria and you've got tons of it and way too much for your immune system to deal with all at once. And that's why people just fall ill all of a sudden very quickly.
Right.
Tick bite 20 years ago, or they'll remember a tick bite last year, but then it's just since their divorce, the very next day they got ill.
Right. Or retired from their job, or...
Right. Exactly.
Right. Whatever thing came into play. So I have people coming in all the time. I'm not transitioning out of this, but I just want your take on it. They're concerned about Zika. They're changing their travel plans. They're not going on vacation anymore. Like, Zika is part of their common vernacular, and it is the primary microbial risk factor as far as they're concerned in the world. How does Lyme compare to the fear of Zika, if we're putting this on a relative scale? And am I just totally comparing apples to oranges?
Well, you know, I only because I see so many of my chronically ill patients on a daily, I have a soft spot for Lyme. But I just get so saddened, because here I'm thinking they're scared of traveling. And you know what? Ticks and spiders who carry infections are in your backyard. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're not just, Megan, in rural areas anymore. We're finding birds who are hitting the Toronto skyscrapers and falling on the ground, and they've got ticks all over themselves, all over them on the sidewalk. So, you know, you do not have to be in the country anymore. You do not have to be in Collingwood. You do not have to be in the Muskokas to get infected. It could be in your backyard where you have a little ravine. Tons of my patients come from Oakville. And one time I asked the patient, you know, why? Like, I don't understand. She goes, oh, we have these beautiful streams and ravines all throughout our backyards in Oakville. So, you know, I just think that, you know, when we're talking about Zika, this international, so you've got to be flying to another country to get this infection. You're worried about that when it could be just like right next to you. I just think it's ridiculous. And the ill effects of Zika are really detrimental when you're pregnant. And so if you're pregnant, yes, of course, take precaution. But otherwise, Lyme disease far exceeds, in my opinion, the manifestations and the dangers.
Okay, so now we've got all these people going, huh, maybe I have Lyme disease. What kind of symptoms? And I think as clinicians, we're really starting to be much more attuned to, you know, get these patients where you're like, nothing, they don't fit any particular traditional label is the wrong word. But when you have those patients where you're like, man, you have an assortment of seemingly despondent or dissimilar symptoms that seem to be quite chronic and debilitating, at least for me, I at least go, could this be Lyme, or could this be another form of stealth infection? What kind of things should patients be looking at in terms of throwing Lyme into their mindset of consideration?
Well, I would say when your diagnosis the diagnosis you've been given and the treatment for the diagnosis isn't working, you should be considering Lyme. The problem that stems with the diagnosing of Lyme, Megan, is that the co-infections add in such a dimension where there's not one patient that actually that actually is presenting the same. And that's when people ask me, you know, don't you get bored treating Lyme? And I go, are you kidding me? It's different every time. You know, there's not one patient who comes in with the same symptoms. So you can have a patient who is coming in with the, and you know, I wish it was so easy, Megan. I wish I had the patient who came in with clinical, you know, the typical Lyme symptoms, which are fatigue and migratory joint pains and headaches. But that's not what I see. I see patients with those symptoms alongside, you know, swollen lymph nodes, pain when they get up in the morning. It's like a bruise feeling on the soles of their feet. They've got lumps and bumps all over. They've got serious anxiety and OCD, and they never had that before. We'll see them with striae or these cat scratches and rashes all over their body. They get these pimple-like sores. And these are more of the Bartonella-type symptoms that we might see in our patients. The patients come in with cardiac symptoms, heart palpitations, chest tightness, shortness of breath. They'll get some POTS type symptoms. This is postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, where they get very dizzy when they can stand up, and they're constantly nauseous. They've got electrical symptoms, sensations, these tingling and numbness that come and go. We're looking at more babesia symptoms. So then we haven't even talked about anaplasma and Ehrlichia. I mean, these are other, all these co-infections can manifest different symptoms. And as a physician, knowing your clinical diagnosis and the history, as well as how to characterize symptoms, is really crucial, because most patients don't come in with typical Lyme symptoms. So these peculiar symptoms that are coming and going, they leave and they depart, and they come back every 4 to 6 weeks. They migrate to different places of your body. Then you really have to be thinking of infections. And it may not be Lyme. It may be Mycoplasma pneumonia. It could be Chlamydia pneumonia. It could be other infections. But you know your body best. And most of my patients are unfortunately told that they're depressed, that they're anxious, that if they just took a little week holiday, everything would be better. And they would just, I mean, most of them are ridiculed. I've had patients get their purses thrown out in the hallway. I've had patients asked to never come back. I mean, most of my patients have been demoralized, and most of them have PTSD from treatment from doctor's offices. So it can be hard. It is a hard illness to diagnose, but once you start to figure out the symptoms and you start treatment, patients get better, and that is just like Christmas.
Okay, so let's talk about treatment. I suspect that you have approaches that you take with someone who calls and says, look, I just pulled 10 ticks off my husband's leg, and he came in from hunting or whatever happens to be going on, or people who are having a more chronic manifestation. First of all, do you have to be on antibiotics to treat Lyme?
So when we're talking about acute and chronic, the treatment is totally different. In my opinion, antibiotics work during an acute tick bite. That's within the first 4 weeks of a bite. So if you were the lucky one to have seen the insect, to have seen the tick or the spider that bit you, if you were a lucky one that got a rash and that you are exhibiting symptoms right after, how lucky are you? Because you are the one that will not fall through the cracks. And if you get those symptoms, then I recommend treatment right away. Unfortunately, Megan, the research is showing that 30 to 50% of patients never recall a tick bite or an insect bite or a rash. And so they just wake up sick 4 to 6 months to a year later. In my practice, though, I will say that it's closer to 80% of my patients never recall a rash or a insect bite. They just get sick within the time of the exposure. So it's the acute phase where I believe antibiotics work very well. And, you know, I'm speaking to a fellow naturopathic doctor, and you and I both know that this goes against every single cell of our bodies, and that this is the last thing that we would ever think. And you believe me, if it wasn't for my niece, I can't believe I'm recommending antibiotics. So when I recommend them, it means that I really, really truly believe that this is the way to get this infection at a lower point. And so I do recommend antibiotics anywhere from 3 weeks to 6 weeks. But the truth is I recommend antibiotics for an acute tick bite until symptoms are gone. That's the ILADS rule, the International Lyme and Associated Disease Society's rule that I'm a member of. And so you treat a person until their symptoms are completely gone, plus a week or two at least, and following up with herbal antimicrobials. So I have a patient that I'm treating presently for the allergies. She came into my office 4 years ago for an acute tick bite, and I recommended that her doctor prescribe her the antibiotics, and it took 4 months for her to get better. And she looks at me today and goes, you know, Dr. Marie, I'm so lucky. If it wasn't for you, I'd have chronic Lyme, wouldn't I? Because most doctors would have just given me 3 to 4 weeks. That's what the guidelines say. So the guideline is you get treatment until your symptoms are gone. That's the guideline. That's the ILADS guideline. And so an acute tick bite, typically it's anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks. With an acute tick bite, I also recommend using herbal antimicrobials. I am very fearful of the Babesia infection in Quebec and Ontario. It's very endemic here. So I don't think that doxycycline covers that very well. So I often combine it with a herbal antimicrobial that will cover Babesia. I use homeopathic Ledum MK, and I give 2 pellets 3 times a day for 3 weeks. I get them to do a poultice of charcoal on top of the bite site. I'll often get them to put a few drops of the herbal antimicrobial on the bite site before the charcoal. And I will do that until that rash is gone, because there's evidence that shows that the infections actually reside in the epidermis of the skin. So really want to be thinking about pulling the infections out. And Ledum does a great job of pushing anything that's not supposed to be in your body out. So I really love using that homeopathic. So these are my kind of go-tos when looking at an acute tick bite. Of course, the best way to treat is prevention, right? So, you know, my children and I cover up when we go outside. I do not live in fear. I still enjoy the outside. My children and my husband and I are avid mountain bikers. We have a cottage. We still participate in outdoor activities, but we are very prudent and we are very careful. So unfortunately, it saddens me as a naturopathic doctor, but I do not do scavenger hunts and bushwhack with my children. I stay on trail. My children, if you've got kids who play soccer, the soccer socks are the best idea. So you've got all your kids, most kids play soccer here in Ontario. So just get them to roll, you wear the soccer socks and roll them up over their pants. Long sleeves. I really like light colored clothing. You can buy sun shirts at the Mountain Climate Co-op. That's what I do for my kids. White, pink, light blues. So you can actually see the insect. They're very, very small. They can be the size of a poppy seed. And the ones, by the way, the ones that are a poppy seed, or whether they're engorged and big, they carry the same amount of infection. It really doesn't matter. So really protection is the best idea. You know, when we walk to our lake at the cottage, we're like Little Red Riding Hood. We take the long way around to get there, and all the other families walk through the long grass. So, you know, it's just these are just choices that we've decided to make to protect ourselves, to allow ourselves to still enjoy the outdoors, but to make sure that we stay healthy and that we stay away from these infections as much as possible.
Yeah, super great advice. And I'm glad you covered, you know, some of those details that people can do to actually protect themselves. It's not perfect. We all know the world is not perfect. There are things that are dangerous out there, right? You have to make the best decisions, but you still have to live your life.
That's right.
What do we do if, so you have a protocol, but like, what do we do if we find a tick on our body? Like, how do we remove it? And can we send it somewhere to be tested for Lyme?
Okay, so when you find a tick on your body, you can use an old school tweezer. That would be perfectly fine. But I will tell you the best tick remover I've ever had or used, and patients have used, especially patients who remove many ticks off their pets daily, is one called the tick twister. So it's a little, it looks like a little hook, and you actually just sort of place it right under the tick, and you twist about four or five times, and it literally comes right out. It's beautiful. It's tight. It's small enough that I actually just kind of tuck it in my sports bra when I go trail running. So it's really, really handy to have. I just want to mention, do not burn the tick. Do not put alcohol on it. Do not put essential oils on it. What you're going to do is cause that tick to get very sick and vomit and regurgitate all of the spirochetes and the infections from his stomach or hair or stomach, whatever, into your body. So you're doing the absolute worst thing. These are sort of old school, you know, mentalities of you know, this is going to be the best thing, but it really isn't. You're actually going to make yourself sicker. And you really want to use a tick twister or a tweezer. You don't want to just pull it out with your bare hands, because two things. You don't want to leave the head in, because the head has a lot of the infection. So you keep inoculating yourself ongoing with these infections if part of that insect is still in your body. And secondly, I've had a mother who's unfortunately was very close to, obviously, to be able to see this tick. They're so small. She was so close and she squeezed it and she inhaled a lot of the and sprayed some of the infection into her nasal passages, and she got Lyme disease that way.
Ugh. All right.
I'm so sorry, Megan.
Well, it's funny. As you're describing this, I was picturing this lime head. And then I looked to my left and this little mouse ran across the floor. And I was like, oh, gosh, nature's attacking us from all angles. Okay. We talked about this before. We talked about this idea that, you know, physicians will look at your blood work and their blood work will be clear. And they'll say, you know what, you're fine. You're good to go. And that's one way of looking at health. But how would you define health?
I define health as balance, emotional, physical, and spiritual. I think they're all equal. You can eat really well, but be a stressed out person and get sick all the time because your emotional and spiritual health is just completely out of balance. So health to me is a person who takes time for themselves, for their family, eats really well, takes time to exercise and values that, puts value in and to taking time to cook. You know, my kids when they were younger and go, Mommy, why do you spend so much time making really healthy lunches for us? Mommy, and I would always answer them, because I want you to be a better Sierra. I want you to be a better Sawyer. I want you to be the best you can be. And that's why I'm spending time to do all these things. And this is, I spend a lot of time talking with my patients. My initial visits are an hour and a half, and sometimes they go over. But I think this is so important because, if you don't spend time talking to your patients on the importance, if, you know, patients came in yesterday, I had a patient come in and she's had a regression, and I went just back to the basics and said, have you been really following the diet? And she goes, you know what, Dr. Marie, I've had a lot of stress and I've been just eating takeout every day. And so, you know, it's really important to tell your patients, you know, I really actually don't want you to go out with your girlfriends this weekend. I want you to stay home and grab your kids and your husband. And I want you guys to chop a ton of veggies and make a really good chili. I want you to spend time making your food together. I want you to spend time to stock up your freezer and finding that balance so that you're not stressed out. You're not running to the grocery store and just picking up whatever because you're starving and there's nothing else to eat. Really spending that taking time to balance on an emotional, spiritual as well as physical level is all equally important to me.
I love that. My last question for you, Dr. Marie, in this part of the interview, what do you want your legacy to be?
Well, I guess I want my legacy to be that I helped to reduce suffering in a lot of my Lyme patients. I helped to reduce misdiagnosis, that I helped actually finding the cause of some of the labels that my patients were given. I know you started asking, you know, what made you a specialist or an expert in Lyme, but I really prefer saying that I have a specialty in treating infectious causes and toxic causes of chronic illness, because I really don't believe in labels. This is going to be a bit of a surprise to the audience members who haven't heard my way of thinking on this, but I really don't believe in IBS. I do not believe in chronic fatigue syndrome. I believe that these are just labels. They are a way for me and Megan as physicians and doctors to communicate to each other. They are a way for us to go, oh, your patient has IBS. Oh, they probably have diarrhea, constipation. They're probably exhausted all the time. They have food allergies. But they do not tell us why you have IBS. Most causes of IBS are due to parasites and yeast. And what about chronic fatigue syndrome? Most causes of chronic fatigue syndrome are due to Lyme and viruses. Most causes of fibromyalgia are due to just toxic overload, toxicity caused by yeast overgrowth as well. And what about MS? There is not one patient I have diagnosed with that has come in with an MS diagnosis in the last 5 years that has not tested positive for either Mycoplasma pneumonia, Chlamydia pneumonia, or Lyme, or Babesia. Or what about rheumatoid arthritis? I mean, Charles Ray Jones found that juvenile rheumatoid arthritis was all over Connecticut. And once he started treating a little girl with a cough and she got better with antibiotics and her knees and all her swelling went away, he realized, wait a second, rheumatoid arthritis, maybe this is an infectious cause. So I believe that Parkinson's, ALS, Sjogren's disease, any autoimmune disease, scleroderma, all of these autoimmune illnesses that we've been given labels to actually all have causes. And what's remarkable is that I have cured cases of MS. I have near miracles that are happening in my offices. I have kids who are coming out of wheelchairs and adults out of wheelchairs. I have patients whose neurological tremors go away and they're given drugs and being told that there is no cure for your illness and that this is idiopathic and that they can't be helped. But I really, truly, and honestly believe that infections and toxins are at the core cause of all of these chronic labels. And so a lot of doctors look at Lyme and go, it's a mimicry disease. It mimics illnesses. But I look at it as it's not a mimicker. It actually causes
it
these
is
diseases.
The cause. Who knew?
That we've just decided to put labels on. And I'm not afraid of the labels. I'm not scared. And I'm not saying that we don't need the labels. We need them, as I mentioned, so that Megan and I can communicate. We can communicate together to know right away, okay, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, they've got the 18 points that are sore all over their body and they've got really fatigue all the time. They can't get out of bed and they're debilitated. So, but it doesn't tell us how to treat the patients. And so once you figure out how to treat your patients, well, you know what? I think skies are open and that we can really see miracles coming out of our offices. And I think this is what keeps me doing what I do, because when my patients get better, Megan, it just feels like Christmas Day. It just feels like, oh my God, I can't believe this. This is just amazing. And it's like, I just feel like the biggest cheerleader. And I just really believe that people should take the hope and keep that hope in them, because I really believe that there's hope for all of us with chronic illnesses and that we can get better. It's not an easy road. It's actually a roller coaster. It goes up and down. But I really believe that there's a cure to getting our patients better and that we should really just let go of these labels and figure out, wait a second, what's going on beneath this label? What do I have? What's at the heart of this? And by doing that, I think that we can make huge, huge headways.
What a gift you are to the world. I'm loving this.
Oh, thanks. Well, I feel very, I feel privileged to be able to be part of healing these patients who have been so misdiagnosed. I mean, on average, patients see 15 doctors, Megan, before they walk into my door. So they've been brutalized and really scarred. And it's just really nice to be able to sometimes share tears with them and to know that, you know, that they can get better. And, you know, oftentimes I get these test results that are even negative for Lyme and I look at them and I go, listen, we could do another $2,000 worth of tests, or I could just help you get better.
Yeah.
And I can. I know I can help them get better. So I don't need to test everything under the sun in order to help people get better. but I often like to cross my T's and dot my I's, and just to have a little bit of evidence just in case I get audited or anything of that matter. But you know, a minor thing. But because we don't use pharmaceuticals, I never really have to worry about that. That's just for my own evidence. And mostly I do these tests, honestly, Megan, truthfully, is for patient input and patient impact. So
yeah, for sure.
If they feel like, okay, it's on paper, it's positive, I'm on board with you, Dr. Marie, I'm all in. But if it's inconclusive, sometimes it's hard to, because there's hardships in this treatment, it's not so fun sometimes with Herxheimer reactions, which are die-off reactions from killing the infections. And so it's really good to have it solidified on paper.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Each month, I'm featuring a new Anthropology quiz to help you unlock and uncover some of the physical performance blocks that may be holding you back from your true potential. When you know better, you can do better. To learn more or to take the quiz, head on over to meganwalker.com/Anthropology quiz. You know, you have so much to say on Lyme, and we only talked so briefly about the foundation and the terrain that enables these things to be problematic in the first place. And I think sometimes the best way of learning about how to live a life where we can protect ourselves and give our body the best opportunity is to actually look at the lives that these practitioners or entrepreneurs who are on the podcast are actually living themselves. And so the second half of this interview, and I always say half, but really what I mean is like 3 minutes, is something that I call our KPIs. So our key performance indicators. And while we have these in our business, I think we also have them in our lives. And so I've got 5 just really quick questions for you about some elements of your life and your lifestyle, so it can give our listeners a little bit of an insight. First question, do you have a consistent morning routine? And if so, can you share it?
Okay. So my consistent morning routine is basically getting up and showering, but in my shower is a little jar of coconut oil. And so I actually just scoop it up and put it in my mouth, and I actually coconut oil pull while I'm in the shower, because coconut oil pulling is an age-old Ayurvedic technique that helps to pull toxins and infections out of your mouth. When you're done after 15 minutes of swishing this, you spit it out, because your mouth is actually like Komodo dragon at this point. So a Komodo dragon will kill you, not from the bite, but from sepsis, from the bacterial overgrowth that will actually ensure in all over your bloodstream. So this coconut oil pulls everything out and is excellent for your health. And then I will come downstairs and either grab a flaxseed cookie from the freezer or my chia pudding that's on the top of my fridge. And I'm off to the races, because I'm typically at the office at 6:30 in the morning most days.
Oh my gosh.
And so I need a quick nutritious breakfast. And my chia pudding, there's cashews and walnuts and lots of almonds and chia, and typically an organic almond milk. Sometimes I make my own homemade cashew milk, which is so easy to do. So I really try to nourish myself as much as I can.
Amazing. Fiction or nonfiction? What are you reading right now?
Right now I am reading, I have a tween little girl, so I am reading a book called Untangled, guiding an adolescent through adulthood, how to maintain the sanity and with that. And she's actually a great little girl, but I just want to be on top of things. I want to be the best mom I can.
Amazing. What is the one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
One thing I'm most consistent with respect to my health is doing saunas 3 times a week. So we have an amazing infrared sauna, and we've actually, my husband kind of got it kind of built in into our bedroom. So it's tucked in nicely. It's near our bed, so I can actually chat with him while I'm in there. But I love it. It's kind of my time away. I usually have a lot of Pulse magazine and lots of things that I just don't have time to read. I feel like it's like a 40 minutes to myself three times a week that I get to just kind of brush up on some of the reading I wanted to do, do some personal stuff reading in there. And it's really time away from electronics as well. So I obviously can't bring anything in there. So it's really, I'm back into old school reading when I'm in my sauna. And I always feel so great when I come out of there.
Very cool. What do you do for fun or play?
For fun or play, I'm very active with the kids. So it depends on the season. So we're so lucky to live here in Canada. We've got these four seasons. So right now we're doing lots of mountain biking and tennis. And then soon in the winter, my kids are ski racers. So I snowboard with them. I try to keep up. And I skate ski as well. And I skate on the canal. And so we're really kind of an active family. And so we really love doing all of these sports together.
It's great. And last question for you, entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I don't think I was born that way. I think that I learned it. I think I learned it. I will say that, I think that a lot of people, say, oh, you're so successful. And I have to be really honest, Megan, I don't think it's because I had the prettiest website or because I spent time doing brochures or spent a lot of time, doing sort of the cosmetic part of the business. I think it's just because I spent a lot of my money trying to be the best doctor. And I to fly to Europe, to fly to all these countries to do the best conferences. I don't think, unfortunately, the best conferences are here in Canada. I think they are in other countries. And so by becoming the best doctor, by having really great bedside manner, that made me busy. And I got patients better. And that patient told 10 patients that I got them better. And then my practice just sort of excelled that way. I think my weakest point is my website and still, but hey, we can only be good at certain things. And I think that's where I need your help on things now. So I'm ready for that part of my life. But I think that these are learned things. I think that when I'm treating patients, there's never a dollar value. I'm never thinking, oh, I'm trying to sell four supplements. I'm always thinking, how am I going to get this patient better? So I think once if you think that way, you'll never do well. Your patients won't get better. You really have to have the patient's best interest at all times. And that's how I think you become a good entrepreneur and good at what you do.
Well, I'm glad that you are good at what you do. I know people are going to want to follow up with you. Where can we direct them to learn more about your work and how they can possibly come and see you as a patient? We're now going to send them to this famous website.
So the best way is to, we have a website, www.hantonwellness.com. And the best way is to just look at the website. I've got tons of information on my website on how I do testing, how I treat, my philosophies. I think we even have the cost and all of that on the website. If not, you can always call one of my front desk staffs and get information on my practice.
Amazing. We will put all of that information and capacity to access you in our show notes. Dr. Matheson, it was such a pleasure having you here today. Thanks so much for sharing your time with us.
Thank you so much, Megan.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Entrepology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.